You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yesterday, the government released their National Adaptation Plan, the first long-term plan for adapting to life under the reality of climate change. With flooding here in Aotearoa and raging temperatures overseas, the news seems saturated with grounds to worry about the future of the planet. But what happens when this worry or grief about the changing planet takes a hold? This week on the Green Desk, I caught up with Gabrielle Feather. She's a climate anxiety PhD student at the University of Tasmania and a research assistant for the Ministry of Social Development here in New Zealand. She's a bit of an expert on climate change and mental health, and so I chatted to her about the topic and about the developing field of study. Here we are now. So let's start by talking about mental health and the climate. As I understand, there's sort of these two areas of both eco-anxiety and climate grief. Are you able to explain how they're caused and how they're experienced and what the difference between those two is?
Yeah, for sure. There's actually even more terms than just eco-anxiety and climate grief. There's also eco-distress, ecological despair. These terms are all pretty informal. No one's really defined them, with hard data yet. That's something that we're working on at the moment. But the way I differentiate between the two terms that you've brought up, eco-anxiety and climate grief, is kind of like the difference between anxiety and depression. So if you think about climate grief is a bit more like depression, it's like a lot of sadness, maybe feelings of hopelessness, feelings of despair, low energy, whereas eco-anxiety is more like distressing, persistent thoughts, intrusive thoughts, persistent worry, maybe thoughts that keep you up at night, kind of a more anxious energy of gotta do something, overwhelm, that kind of thing.
What leads to someone experiencing these sorts of thoughts and feelings? Like, is it sort of an oversaturation of news?
Yeah, good question. So news is definitely a big part of it. So people can kind of go through a bit of a kind of like an awakening to awareness of what's happening in the world if they've previously been in a bubble that maybe doesn't talk about it, and it can be quite shocking. So there can be a lot of news that comes at once for someone who, you know, anything, you can find out any information on the internet these days, so they go down a rabbit hole of facts and maybe reading like an IPCC report or something like that. Of course, there's the direct experience, so maybe bushfires or floods or something actually happening to someone, which leads to a kind of a different sort of eco-anxiety, maybe more like a PTSD response where something actually traumatic has happened to a person and they've got to process it. And then they've got to process it with the wider sort of existential threat of, well, what does this mean for the whole world and the future of my life? Those are sort of the two main places that it comes from, either direct experience or indirect through the news. But then, of course, you've got to have a pretty, there's got to be factors that work together that actually lead to an experience of distress, and it's to do with someone's values, belief systems. You know, left-leaning people, for example, are much more likely to be concerned about the climate. And then from a mental health perspective, people who are more susceptible to other mental health problems are also more susceptible to climate anxiety. So there's been correlations between people with eating disorders and climate anxiety, for example, and certainly anxiety and depression and climate anxiety.
How long has it been since you've started seeing people coming with these fears? Because is it quite a new area of research?
It is a new area. So I'm doing a PhD, which means that I'm looking at all of the history of all of the research that's been done. And it really started in around 2008, and you had kind of one study in 2008, one study in 2010, and then the last 5 years, it's just been hundreds coming out at once. And I've personally been in the field on the periphery at least for over 10 years because I used to work for the Wilderness Society in Australia. I started in 2012, so 10 years ago, and that was when I really started to see it in my colleagues, my friends, and that's what sort of inspired me to take this path.
thinking about that increase in these anxieties, what sort of numbers are you seeing now of people experiencing these fears?
A really big landmark study just came out last year that interviewed 10,000 young people across 10 different countries. Basically, what they found is 59% of young people are very or extremely worried, and 84% are at least moderately worried. So that's some really, really big numbers now. The numbers of people that are actually experiencing dysfunction as a result of that worry is a lot lower, but we're expecting to see those numbers go up pretty quickly. Yeah.
Is that because of the sort of extreme weather events that we're seeing and the quite visual effects of climate change that are starting to play out?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the amount that it's in the news, the amount that people are talking about it. You know, 5 years ago, there was still debate around whether or not climate change was actually real. But that kind of question has been taken off the table now for the most part. And then, of course, there was like the young people's movements with the school strike for climate. And it's just people are just a lot more aware of it.
And is there a big difference? We've talked a lot about young people, but is this present in older generations as well, or are they a little less concerned?
No, it definitely is. And there are some studies that have found that older generations are actually more willing to do something about it, interestingly enough. So sort of 55 plus, they're taking more action in their day-to-day life to mitigate climate change, possibly because they've got like the money and time to do so. The kind of age group that seems to be the least involved is sort of between the ages of 35 and 55. So boomers and Gen X's.
And let's talk about boomers. And well, no, but let's talk about children. And touch briefly on this anxiety that people have, or, you know, this choice of whether to have children or not, and the effect of what bringing another human into the earth actually means for the future.
Yeah. So in the same study, this really big study, 1 in 3 of these young people said that it was impacting whether or not they would have children, or maybe the number of children they were going to have. And this is something that I personally went through, deciding whether or not to have a child. It's a big issue that we don't have an answer to, in terms of, you know, we can't just say to someone, yes, it's going to be okay, or no, it's not. It's a really personal process that one has to go through to decide whether or not they're willing to bring a child into this world, so to speak. But on a personal level, I chose to look at it from the perspective of, I don't know if you heard
time.
You know, the world has always had really big threats. It's always actually been kind of a hard place to live in. There's been the Cold War, there's been world wars, Victorian times were terrible, there were the Middle Ages, and people have always struggled. And I actually think that the time we're living in is a really exciting time, because we're seeing people band together, rise up. I really like to focus on the positives, and I like to think that for my child, that she's going to live in a time that's really, really exciting, and maybe be involved in some pretty big movements and shifts for humanity.
In terms of those movements, we've just seen today in New Zealand the National Adaptation Plan come out. Do you think that's going to help ease climate worries for people, or is it more bringing them to front of mind and perhaps perpetuating those fears?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to do both for different groups of people, to be honest. I think that for those who are already heavily engaged and maybe who've already experienced some level of climate anxiety, they might find that it does provide some relief, like at least something's being done. But at the same time, they might feel like it's not enough, or it's too late, or it's too little too late. For someone who's maybe never thought about it and they see that in the news, it might start that process of kind of unraveling and realizing, oh, this is actually real. And there's, you know, some things that came out of that plan, such as like, you know, some communities are going to be completely inundated with water, and like, how are we going to adapt to the big changes that are coming, that could be really scary for some people to think about. So I think it's both, it's going to create hope and it's also going to create fear.
And to finish off, can I ask, what is something practical that people can do if they're experiencing worries about the climate?
Yeah, definitely. In psychology, we've found evidence for a type of therapeutic model called acceptance and commitment therapy. And most basically, this therapeutic model is about accepting with or being with your emotions and getting present and then doing what matters. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is to really just notice and your thoughts and feelings about climate change and know that they're rational. There's nothing wrong with them and there's nothing wrong with you for having them, and you don't have to change them. And that's a really important piece, I think, because there's a real threat of individualizing the issue if we start trying to fix the person or take away their feelings or build their resilience even. And then doing what matters is, it doesn't have to mean going out and joining a climate rally or a blockade, because that can really cause burnout and it can cause more despair or more distress. Doing what matters can be something that's aligned with your values. So it might be like growing food or knitting a jumper, and those things create healing and they're sort of therapeutic because they make you present. They slow you down, and often what we need is exactly what the world needs too. So to really just slow down, get present, do something simple, localize ourselves, get involved with our communities, go join a community group that does tree planting, marine care, that kind of thing. Just little things in your local community that connect you with yourself, connect you with the people around you, and get you present. And that's what we found is the most effective.
That was Gabrielle Feather, a climate anxiety PhD student at the University of Tasmania, talking with me about mental health and climate change. That's it for the Green Desk for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Matawa.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.